Welcome, friends. James Corbett here from CorbettReport.com. It is the 24th day of October, 2011, and today we're talking to our regular weekly guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at intforecaster.com. And Bob Chapman, it is always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you again for gracing us with your presence.
Well, that sounded very nice, and I thank you very much. What a wonderful way to start the week.
Yes.
I'm all excited.
I certainly hope the listeners are excited, too, because, again, we have so much to talk about that it's hard to fit it into one conversation. But I actually wanted to start by talking about the Republican dog and pony show, or whatever it is right now that's going on between Romney and Perry, mostly. But, of course, Ron Paul being one of the only real contenders in the race, who, of course, is being pretty much ignored in the media, but this weekend he made some headlines, including this New York Times headline: Paul would eliminate cabinet departments to cut $1 trillion. And it says Representative Ron Paul on Monday unveiled an aggressive budget plan that would greatly shrink the federal government that he is seeking to run, eliminating the agency that oversees airport security, the Departments of Energy and Education, and three others, while cutting all war financing. Which, of course, it would be a wonderful, brilliant thing, but of course it's being portrayed as some sort of radical suggestion in the mainstream press. And I don't know if you saw him on Meet the Press on Sunday, but he was being treated quite disrespectfully by the host there as well. So no surprise there, I suppose. But what's your thoughts on what's happening in the Republican field right now?
Well, I think it's a distraction. That's why they got this going on, a distraction from the financial and economic problems in America and in Europe as well, although most people don't pay much attention to that because it's so far, far away. But it certainly has a direct bearing on what goes on in America, or at least at this time it does. I think it's a wonderful idea. These are agencies that have, with education, they've created an absolute nightmare. And the states and the counties, the municipalities, they should be deciding what kind of education is going to be profit for the children of America. As we well know, since Deweyism began in 1928, that there has been a perpetual downgrading of the quality of education so that they can make dummies out of our children. There's a lot of people who survived that, but in recent years, not so. Uniformly, education has been terrible, and that's even in private schools. And I think the way the private schools have gotten around it, they just load the kids up with homework. My kids went to private schools, and it was 4 or 5 hours a night. And that's pretty hard when you're in school all day and then maybe have extracurricular activities afterwards. But still, it was better than most of what the other children were getting. And in the public school system, of course, there's exceptions to that, but generally speaking, that's the way it is. And if you look at the statistics in the inner city schools, you'll see that the children who start ninth grade, approximately 55% of them graduate. I mean, that's abysmal. And even at university, and this has been going on for years and years, approximately 45% of freshmen drop out after the first year. And that tells you that maybe they shouldn't have been there in many instances in the first place. And that brings us to the current problem with payment of loans to go to school, college. And people are saying, gee, there's no jobs for me, and I really didn't learn very much, and I spent all that money, and business really doesn't want me. And what happened, starting in the 1960s, they allowed anybody to go to college. And many people, particularly minorities, were swept through college, receiving degrees, and they shouldn't have been there in the first place. And it's this great equality thing. And what they did is they cheapened the degree, and you could say a lot of the degrees aren't worth the paper that they're written on. So anyway, education's a good place. Energy is ridiculous. It's just run by the major oil companies. And what was the third one? Was it
The TSA is one of the agencies he wants to take down.
Right.
Also,
that's separately in itself.
Right. Yeah. He wants to get rid of the TSA.
Well,
and also,
why don't we extend that to several other agencies, such as the Homeland Security, for starters.
A very good place
to
start.
The whole thing is a boule base. One third of the people who work for them have criminal records. I mean, what kind of a thing is that? What is this, criminals tracing criminals because criminals understand criminals better than anybody else?
Well, but who else would want a job like that? What normal person would really want to do that job?
But we don't need that job.
Exactly.
I mean, there are no terrorists running around America. If they are, they're hiding out. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the massive amounts of money being thrown down a sewer to accommodate this, what would we call it, state of transformation, the subjection of the American public. And but anyway, I think it's a great idea.
And of course, the other key part of that plan is cutting all war financing and stopping all foreign wars.
Well, I spend a lot of time on radio every week, half for the last 8 years, with Drew Raines and the Marine Disquisition, and I email with and talk with many current and many retired or people who have left the service, and they have finally found out how they have been and are being used. And of course, a lot of people have died for these wars for profit, we'll call them. And now the government is faced with an enormous cost of running the Veterans Association, Veterans Administration. And it's going to squeeze out all the older members. About 10 years ago, I was in that system because I'm a veteran. And I never had anything untoward happen to me. But I used their facilities for a yearly checkup. And they were really pressed at the time, so I told them to drop me out of the system so somebody else who needed help more than I did could have it. But they're overwhelmed now, and it's going to be that way for the next 40 years. And the bill from that is going to be enormous. There were two organizations that did surveys, one in Princeton. I can't remember the other entity. I don't know whether it was a university or not. But anyway, they figured between $4 and $6 trillion, and closer to six, had been used just in the last dozen years in Iraq, Afghanistan, and all the other places that they've been. I mean, it's a staggering amount of money. Can you imagine if that money had been invested in the U.S. economy, what would have happened? And so it's the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower talked about. And not too long ago, as you pointed out, others have talked about the progression of the usage of military to make money. I don't care how many people get killed, they just want to make money. I think it was General Powell, wasn't it?
That's right. Colin Powell talked about the terror industrial complex a few years ago.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I think he had a great change of heart once he went into government and found out really what they were up to. And Smedley Butler found out the same thing in the early 1930s, one of the most decorated Marines in history, and got the Congressional Medal of Honor, I think, twice. In fact, he is a relative of Drew Raines, and marine tradition. But anyway, the whole thing is nothing but gobbledygook. I mean, they're in there creating wars for distractions and all for them to make money. I mean, look what they just did in Libya.
Yeah,
it's a perfect
look
example,
at the fruits of
example
of that.
Of grand
yeah.
theft.
Yeah. And
I mean, there's no question.
And the latest reports are indicating that, that apparently they're going to be perhaps instituting some sort of Sharia law now in Libya. So it's done to perfection, creating the enemies that they can then use as an excuse to go and invade the country for themselves later on.
That's right. And I understand the British and French water suppliers lining up to get a hold of those four aquifers, and the big oil companies, the Netherlands, England, and the United States, and France, are lining up to get a hold of probably the best oil in the world, second largest inventory in the Middle East, and nobody ever hears about what happened to the $100 billion sovereign investment fund that belonged to Libya. The last I heard was 10% had disappeared. So they're stealing all the money. And in the final analysis here, and incidentally, what happened to the gold? I mean, we've seen pictures of American military personnel with the gold. Now, where did it go? I mean, who has it? It belongs to the Libyan people. Why was Mr. Gaddafi unceremoniously murdered? The main reason was not all of the things I just told you about. The reason was because he had made deals where he had paid people like Tony Blair and Bill Clinton and George Bush. He paid them off to keep the heat on him, off of him. And obviously there were powers higher than them who decided that the looting of the country was more important. And so that's why they unceremoniously killed him.
Exactly right. Well, I was actually on RT Russia Today doing an interview just as that news was breaking about his death, and it was still tentative at the time, so we were talking about it, and basically I said, well, if they've captured him, he's probably going to be dead by the end of the weekend, because dead men tell no tales, and lo and behold, an hour or two later, we found out that, yeah, he had been killed, so big surprise. Yeah, no, that's exactly the point. I think they had to get rid of him because he just knew way too much, but I guess you started your prefaced your comments about the Republican race by saying basically it's a distraction from the real pressing issues. And in fact, that's exactly the point that that Ron Paul was making on Meet the Press back on Sunday, where he was saying basically he couldn't believe the types of debates that the Republican Party were having these days, talking about Mitt Romney's gardener and whether he's an illegal immigrant or not, when literally the economy is collapsing down around us as we speak, and the Eurozone is crashing, and all of these world-shattering events are taking place, but people are hardly batting an eyelid and still talking and obsessing over issues of very little importance. So let's not be like that, and let's move on to some other issues. For example, the Eurozone and the latest updates from what's going on over there.
Well, we are now being told that by Wednesday there will be some sort of a conclusion. I don't know what conclusion they can come to. The ability of the Eurozone, European Central Bank, the EFSF, which is the European Financial Stability Fund, they are going to be recipients of $500 billion, of which Germany put up half. German Parliament, which is the Bundestag, said, look, this is it. You're not getting any more money. And this is the last chance. And it's against the German Constitution, which means they have to have a referendum to change the Constitution to allow the leveraging of that money. So I think they're at a dead end there. Now what they're doing is talking about the EFSF acting like an insurer backed up by about 30% of the money that they loan by real insurance companies like Alliance. And so their exposure would be 70%, but the exposure would be of all the European countries, as well as other countries on the periphery. And so we've got another end run, we'll call it, around the fact that Germany can't and won't leverage that money. They wanted to get $3 trillion, and they wanted to use derivatives to do that. And you've seen what's happened to the derivative market. We just had Bank of America transfer $54 trillion worth or something like that to the FDIC-insured fund. So they won't have to pay it off. The government will. It's just incredible. J.P. Morgan Chase did the same thing for a smaller amount, and that's going to grow in size because they make up about 92% of the derivatives. But getting back to the Eurozone, I don't think they're going to be able to do that either. And the money is not available to fund the probable amount of money that's going to be needed to bail out Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Belgium, Spain, and Italy. And it's being reflected in their economies and their numbers now. And just this morning I picked up a piece out of Europe that we're looking at a very quickly slowing European economy, and it's happening to Japan and China as well as the United States. And some countries have not been affected much yet, but I'm sure they will be in time, but probably not to the degree that the countries that will be affected the most, let's say that Europe, England, and the U.S. are at 10, which is worst. Some of these countries have come in at fours and fives over the next several years, mainly because they have natural resources, and maybe they've got solid financials. But the point here is that there is no solution to the European problem, and they're going to come up with some grandiose scheme that's not going to work, and we'll find that 3 to 6 months from now, maybe longer. And they just avoiding the inevitable, which is, let's have a big meeting and let's let these six countries that should have never been in the Eurozone in the first place, let's let them drop out, go back to their own currencies, let them default, we'll take the losses, and what they're going to do is ring fence the banks, which means circling the wagons. And in each country, the government will bail out the banking structure by taking all the bad bets and putting them in separate banks like they did with Dexia 2 weeks ago. And that's what they're going to do. So who gets stuck with all of the bad debt? Not the bankers. The public does in every country. And that's their plan. And this is going to be ongoing for years unless they have a meeting and make the changes I just described. And that's the easiest way to do it. And there's a precedent for that, which was the Smithsonian talks in the early 1970s, and then the Plaza Accord of 85 and the Louvre Accord of 1987. And so they've done this before. And so get ready for it. And what will that mean to you? Your currencies will all be devalued against one another. Maybe some of them will be revalued, which they're not going to like very much. And then there'll be a big default. So what you have to do in figuring where you should be with your investment dollars, you don't want to be in the stock market except for gold and silver shares. The bond market's at a 34-year high. I pass. And so what does that leave? Gold and silver-related assets. That's the only safe place. And if everything else, like in 1933, in the stock market, dropped 90%, gold and silver shares went up over 500%. But the only safe place to be was in gold and silver. And that was the same as happened during the inflationary recession from 1977 to 1981. And in the final analysis, they're going to be very, very volatile. You've got to get into them, into that sector, gold and silver, coins, bullion, and shares, and you got to stay there long term. You can't be jumping up and down because you just lost $150,000 on paper, and 4 weeks later you're up $300,000. You close your eyes and hope that I'm right.
Well, you know, I suppose that's one way of putting it, but there's obviously more to it, and it struck me afresh today just how that trick is done, because, of course, we've been seeing a lot of the mainstream media trying to say that, oh, it's just a bubble, and oh, look, the gold bubble is popping, and oh, it's falling, and look at this, and I was just looking at the charts today, the 24-hour gold price, and then the 1 week, and then the 1 month, and the 6 month, and then the 1 year, and the 5 year, and the 10 year, and of course, once you start looking at historical levels, you realize, oh wait, there's been a huge spike in the last 10 years, and it's to the amount that it dropped recently is just ridiculously small in the big scheme. But of course, they keep you focused, laser tight on the 1 week or the 1 month or whatever is best for their purposes, and that's how the scam is run. And unfortunately, a lot of people fall for it because they just have no long-term perspective.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and of course, the intercession of the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury, and other central banks and authorities in the market. I mean, this has been going on since 1988 when the Working Group on Financial Markets under executive order was founded. And it's not only gold and silver, it's commodities. And it's keeping the stock market up and the bond market up. I mean, these people aren't fooling anybody. Example, Operation Twist, why did they have it? They want to hold short-term interest rates down. They want to bring long-term interest rates down. So the next thing is, and what they're going to do, is have a new QE3. And that will be, I think, to purchase the remainder of the toxic securities. And they would be bonds which contain mortgages. And those bonds that they were purchased at $1,000 a piece can be worth anywhere between $5 and $30 or $300 or whatever. And the Fed never tells you what they paid for these assets, which is probably much more than they were worth. But that's only supposition because they won't tell you. It's a secret. I mean, can you imagine a private company telling you that you can't know what they're doing? I mean, give me a break. But anyway, the next event will be to take those more. And incidentally, they already own $1.3 trillion of those toxic securities. I mean, if they took another $700 billion to take it up to $2 trillion, they want that money to go into the long end of the market to take down the average yield on a seven-year note down lower so that mortgages can be cheaper. They also want them to take part of that money to go into the stock market and drive it up. And that's why the market's doing what it's doing right now, because these guys on Wall Street all know what's coming down the pike because they tell the Fed what to do. Interesting, huh? Because they own the Fed. And so that's the next move. Now, if you notice, there's no mention of banks lending to small and medium-sized companies. Not at all. Now, they create 70% of the jobs, so obviously the people who are in the financial world could care less whether the economy recovers. They are just bent on making as much money as humanly possible so that their banks don't go under. That's what this is all about. Because the people who control the economies and the finances of the world are the central banks and other banks. They have great power. Now, this great power allows them to control everything. And that's why they're saving their banks. Because if their banks go under, their power is lost. If their power is lost and the people listen to programs like this and find out who's doing all this stuff to us deliberately, then the public's going to be quite put out of place once the banks go down and say, hey, you guys over there, you did that. And so that was treasonous. So we got to put you in jail. We got to take all those ill-begotten gains away from you. And I think that's the way it could very well play out.
Well, we're certainly seeing what's happening right now, and people are certainly starting to identify some sort of the economic element of what's going down, obviously, with the Occupy Wall Street protests taking shape in North America, which, of course, is really just an extension of the austerity protests that have been taking place around the world for at least a year now. And speaking of protests around the world, I mean, we saw a lot happening last week in Greece and other places, so it certainly is seems to be heating up again. But I guess before we move on to listener questions, are there any other aspects of anything going on in the world that you'd like to cover today?
No, I think the highlight of the weekend was the approach by Ron Paul to cutting back on government and taking power out of the hands of people who have just done a dreadful job, an instrument of suppression policy and of one form or another. And I think that was probably the most important event of the weekend. The passing of Mr. Gaddafi should have been baked into the cake a long time ago. I mean, he knew where he was headed, but, you know, the man's 84, 83, whatever he was, and he lived his life, and I think he was in power for 44 years, and so I guess by his standards, he lived a good life, so he lost in the end, and this is the kind of thing that we have to stop. Dictators coming to power in the first place, and stopping the people who are financing dictators to come to power in the first place. And, you know, America and England especially have very, very large histories of never seeing a dictator that they didn't like to make some kind of a deal. And so that is something that we'll have to work on in the future.
Yes, unfortunately true, and again, we have seen this time and time again, so really what played out in Libya shouldn't be that surprising for anyone, and to be honest, I don't know why these dictators keep making deals with these people, because they've seen what's happened to all the other dictators that they made deals with in the past, and, you know, Saddam and
they usually
Milosevic.
End up killing them.
Yeah, it always ends up that in the end, they end up getting hanged and double-crossed. And
I want to interject here. I knew he's now deceased, and I can tell the story. Station master for the Central Intelligence Agency, and he retired, but was still doing freelance work, if you may. And the United States government, he told me this himself, had him and another man go down to the Dominican Republic, put a tree across the road, and when the president came by, they just machine gunned him on orders from the U.S. government. And the man's name was Trujillo. who was murdered. And that's a true story. So I know for sure that this is the kind of things that they do, and they think nothing of it.
Yes, unfortunately unsurprising to those who have been researching.
And the man's name was Mitchell Verbell. Mitchell Verbell. And that's just the mind, you know, that's how their minds work. And I know that's hard for the average person to understand, but there are people out there, I don't know what to use it, who just have criminal minds. And unfortunately, some of them are in the CIA.
Well, I think people like that tend to get attracted to and gravitate to positions where they can commit their crimes with impunity, because, of course, the intelligence agencies are just beyond the reach of any law enforcement to try to rein them in, unfortunately. Well, that's a strange departure point, but I wanted to get in another listener question, this time from a listener in named Edward in Canada, I believe. And he writes, Bob, you have referred to how speculators use the bond market to, so to speak, target an entire country and take it down, as happened in Greece. You have also said that it is too technical to try to explain. Could you please, one, explain it in layman's terms, and two, say whether it is possible for this to happen in Canada? Thank you.
Well, I think we'll tackle the Canadian viewpoint first, because it's quite easy. For some reason, Canadian banks did very, very little in the way of purchasing for themselves or for clients. Some of the brokerage firms did, but not a lot of them. The toxic waste I just spoke of, and those were the mortgages which were securitized into bonds. And so they never had that dreadful exposure of losing money. 60% of the bonds were placed in Europe, incidentally. And I can't, to this day, figure out why the attorneys and the experts in Europe and the handful in Canada and the handful in the United States that took down these securities never questioned their ratings. I mean, I just can't believe it. I mean, how can so many expert people be so dumb? There had to be another reason, but I won't get into it. But anyway, Canada has a very solvent financial system compared to others. And they've just always been very conservative compared to others. And so I've always said, and that would be for the last couple of years, that what I see is terrible problems internationally, and the worst hit are going to be the U.S., Canada, U.S., England, and Europe. And they're going to be tens. They're going to be bad tens. Canada might be a 3 or a 4 or a 5. Same with Mexico. That's surprising. But they have natural resources. And incidentally, they're drilling a new field close to where American firms have a field, deep water, in the Gulf of Mexico. And they're going to make a deal on it. In other words, if we cut into your oil, well, we'll give you back part of it. But the point is this. I think Canada's going to do fine compared to everybody else. As far as what they've done in Greece as an example, is that, and it's not easy because it was a combination of things. I think a number of years ago, probably 10 or 12 years ago, the bankers decided they could lend to Greece if it was in the Eurozone with impunity, because the other nations would come in and bail Greece out. And if they couldn't do that, the bankers would demand that they receive collateral for their bonds, which is never part of the original contract. And what they wanted to do was actually steal everything the Greek government had. And they're still up to it. They're still trying to get collateralization ex post facto. which means after the fact for those of you who didn't take Latin. And so that's why they push this issue. But it's a very dangerous thing for them to do. And the reason why is they're holding very large amounts of Greek bonds. Now, I think probably the French are the most exposed. And half or a third, maybe half of the French holdings are insured by the legacy banks in New York through to CDS, which is credit default swaps, derivatives. And so what they've done is what insurance companies do. They get together and they lay off the risk, not on two companies, but 222 companies. And they all take a piece of the action. And that's what's happened with Greek debt. So the higher the yield goes, which is over 100%, and the lower the value of the security, they think, the banks think, that the more power they have to try to get collateral to offset the losses, which they've said they are willing to take, which are 21% of the total. They should be taking the whole thing. But the nations have stepped in because they control all the politicians, just like they do in America. And the politicians in the different countries have said, oh, look, you take 21%, we'll take the rest. Whose will? Who's we? It's the public in each and every country. And that's what that good bank, bad bank, ring fencing, circling the wagons is all about. It's taking all the debt, or a good part of it, away from the banks and giving it to the public so that they can pay it off for the banks who started this whole thing in the first place. That is really what's going on. And so if they want to make Greek bonds go one way or the other, they can do that. They do it through the ECB. The ECB miraculously found hundreds of billions of dollars. No, they didn't tell us where they got it. They got it from the U.S. Fed through a swap operation for $500 billion several weeks ago. What are they doing? They're buying Spanish and Italian bonds to shore up the market and keep the interest rates down, because there's mega financing coming up for all of these banks and central banks. So you have a situation where the compounding problems are unbelievable. This, if you understand it fully, you know that what you're seeing on the political and financial scene in Europe is a dog and pony show. Smoke and mirrors. And it's not going to solve anything. They're just going to try to extend it further into the future. Will they get away with it? Probably. What will happen? The euro will go lower in value versus other currencies. Most of them are talking about 130. And everybody in Europe thinks there's going to be a deal. What's going to happen to that? There's no deal. It's going to be pretty devastating. And even if they get a deal, is it going to come back to haunt them in 3 to 6 months or 2 to 3 years? The answer, unequivocally, is yes. And so, another stopgap, another way to expend time into the future so they can conjure up their next war and blame everything on that war.
It often comes back to that, doesn't it? That's the old trick that they love to pull out at times like this, and that's why we've been concentrating on it so much lately, and unfortunately, just more and more signs that they're shaping up to start something with Iran. Luckily, that Iranian plot fiasco that they pulled out of their hat the other day, a week hasn't seemed to have gained any traction at the international level, but I think that's probably just the beginning of an opening salvo of things that we're going to be seeing coming up here. And I think everyone's better hold on to their hat and better get ready for whatever's coming. Again, some very, seems like we always tend to end on a very depressing note. Is there any positive or bright signs we can leave people for the rest of their week?
Well, Warren Paul's announcement and his win in the straw poll was almost 54%. And that's very, very positive. If we were able to get him elected and some people like him, we could turn this thing around. And would the financial power step in and try to stop him? Absolutely. Will they try to kill him? Probably. And he knows that, because he's discussed it with other people who I talk to. I've never talked to Mr. Paul, although he knows about me and what I do. And in fact, he asked somebody what I think was important. And I said, well, other than getting rid of the Fed, get rid of the president's working group in financial markets, because they're rigging everything. We don't have any free markets, and it's got to stop. And so that would be tops in my agenda. And also, there should be major changes in the Securities Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Corporation. They're both utterly and thoroughly corrupt, and they have been ever since their inception.
Imagine my shock. The SEC, the CFTC, no, they couldn't be involved in any shenanigans.
Well, they certainly are. And they're allowing through these algorithmic trades, which their computers sit next to the computer at the New York Stock Exchange, and they front-run every order. They don't call it that. They call it something else. It's front-running. It's against the rules. Naked shorting. It's against the rules. There's all kinds of things going on. Inside information, it's unbelievable. It was bad when I was in the industry for 30 years. But now, is there anybody left who's honest? I don't know. And, you know, nobody on Wall Street says anything about anything, because they're all making piles of money, and they don't care. And if they speak out, they're ostracized. They're run out of the business. I know. I've been there. I know how it works. Look what they did to Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, because they stepped sideways. And so that's what you can expect. They have vast power and enormous trillions of dollars to spend doing what they want to do.
Well, that raises the question for me. As we see the banksters pinching more and more, and more of the sort of low-level minions who have been serving them so well all this time get squeezed out of the picture, do you think there's going to be more whistleblowers from the inside of Wall Street stepping out to tell us about some of the shenanigans that are going on, or do you think they're going to eliminate that type of thing before it gets out of control?
Well, I think it will happen for people who are really disgruntled, who have been cashiered for one reason or another, or have been allowed to be shanghaied by the SEC. I mean, the SEC is like a blunt instrument. XYZ firm over there, small brokerage firm, maybe 1,000 brokers. They're making too much money. They're really cutting into our competitive position. And so we want them out of the way. So SEC, go after them, put them out of business. This is the way it works. It's not in the form of emails or telephone calls. These people meet in the street or meet at lunch and say, look, this is what we want done, and the payoff will be there for you. And they go ahead and do it.
All right, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there for this week, so why don't we tell people a little bit about the forecaster and how they can get their hands on it?
Well, the international forecasters about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesday and Saturday, usually 35 or 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out to those who are not on the internet. And everything you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. theinternationalforecaster.com. Or you can go to www.intforecaster.com. intforecaster.com. For those of you who want questions answered, and we answer everyone, or if you would like a copy of either, or if you'd like a copy of our latest report on gold and silver shares, email us. And that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com, Bob, at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And you can get copies there. And also, they have a special offering there. For those of you who want to become subscribers, it's a free one-year subscription. And the offer that they are making is really terrific. So take advantage of it.
Well, Bob, the International Forecaster Chapman, thank you once again for brightening up our Mondays with your pearls of wisdom.
Well, I thank you very much. Unfortunately, it's not as bright and as positive in the positive sense that we'd like it to be. But you got to learn to handle this stuff. And it's the world you're living in, whether you like it or not. And so you got to listen to it. And if you don't, it's going to cost you.
That's right. I think it's time for us as a society to put on the big boy pants and face what's happening. So, Bob Chapman, thanks again for your time.
Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to next week.